Well, certainly I would like to apologize for the chairperson who is not with us at the moment. Maybe he might join us later. Please. Now, also we have apologies here from Mr. Stein, Mr. Tele, who is sick, and Ms. Nyalu, who is a scoper. So, I don't think this meeting will need any quorum because the process we are embarking on this morning is a process whereby we are being taken through by the research unit and the legal services, parliamentary legal services, which is an internal process. It's not something outside our process here. Thank you. But now, the briefing is on the Marine Living Resource Amendment Bill. Thank you. Honourable Fandana.
Yes, I'm just worried, Chairperson, that the Minister put out a statement, I think it was yesterday in the media, where she said that this committee should be solely tasked with just focusing on the MLRA. They should not take their attention away from anything else. And then, and this MLRA is such an important issue. And then the Chairperson is not here, and the rest of the committee is not here, so it just worries me if the Minister puts out a statement like that, and then nobody else thinks it's important. Thank you.
Honourable Paliso,
Chairperson, the process is with us now. Can we get everything?
Without wasting time, we are going to ask Honourable Fandale, the research unit, to take us through. Let's just concentrate, apply our minds, because we have made it a point that this process takes place. And all the members, on Tuesday, we discussed about this to the extent that we all agreed that we are going to take the process forward, because the meeting that was supposed to start at 11 said, no, let's start at 9 o'clock. I think that only shows how serious this committee takes this bill. I think that should be on record. Thank you. So we'll ask the research unit to take us without wasting time. On Friday today, people are connecting flights, and I think we should be serious.
Chairperson, that brings me to Tuesday, where we discussed the visit to Hout Bay as well, which I thought was quite important, and we said how important it was to go to Hout Bay, and then SMS had said that the speaker had, or the chairperson of committees had approved our visit to Hout Bay, and then half an hour later we received an SMS to say that the scheduled oversight visit to Hout Bay had been cancelled, but we had been given no reason for that. So I think we are, ons is gerechtig op een verskoning of a reader. We are entitled to a reason why it was cancelled. Do you not agree with me, Chairperson?
Oh, Honourable Fandale, if I may respond to that, the Chairperson will respond to that. He is handling that. I'm sorry for that disorganization, but the Chairperson will handle that. Over to the research unit. Thank you.
Good morning, members, colleagues, and guests. I will skip some few pages from the presentation and go straight to the objectives of the bill. I trust that we have seen the copy of the bill. So I will just be highlighting some few issues which I think the committee may need to take up with the department. Okay. The the amendment is actually looking at the main objective is to incorporate the small-scale fisheries policy so that it can be implemented. The current Marine Living Resources Act does not recognize the small-scale fisheries policy. So for it to be implemented, it needs the Marine Living Resources Act to be amended. The department conducted its own consultation a few months from April, May, and June, after extension of the comments period, and published the comments that were obtained from the various consultation or hearings or workshops until it ultimately went through cabinet and finally here in parliament. Basically, what it does is amends the definitions so that small-scale fisheries can be recognized, and in some of the definitions, it seeks to replace subsistence fisheries or subsistence fishing with small-scale fishing. And also introduce some new terms that are found throughout, or that will be found throughout the bill. When you go to section one, under the definitions, there are three basically new definitions, which are mostly around the small-scale fisheries. With the small-scale fisher, the small-scale fisheries sector, the small-scale fishing community. The definition on itself of a small-scale fisher appears to be an expanded version of the subsistence fisher. And the way it appears that they are grouping the small-scale fishing, or they are putting what was generally called a subsistence fishing together with the small-scale fishing. The thought or the understanding is that there are slight differences between subsistence fishing and also small-scale fishing. There was a study or a review that was done, I think it was late 99 or 2000 there, that looked at the subsistence fishing, and what they found that some of the high value fish species had to be used for commercial purposes, had to be converted somehow within the subsistence fishing into some commercial function that included the West Coast rock lobster, the traditional lionfish and abalone. And ultimately in 2001, these ones were commercialized according to that review. While on the other side, with subsistence fishing, there are differences that can be seen. Let's say when we look at it as small-scale fishing as proposed, combining what is currently known as subsistence fishing and what would be known as small-scale fishing, there are some differences in terms of management requirements between the two. One, in that, for example, in the Eastern Cape and KZN, the resource users there under the subsistence fishing are generally using low-value intertidal fisheries resources, and which is slightly different when looking at management to high value inshore resources like abalone, your West Coast rock lobster. So it becomes a little bit tricky when you look at it that it has to be managed in a similar way. So I think this can be explained better by the department. So the committee may need to take this up so that there is clarity as to how are they seeing this thing working together. Like more especially when you look at the end user of these resources from these to what I can call slightly separate sectors. One where it's generally focused at personal consumption, be it in the family or the person who's harvesting it, and the other part which is now somehow called small scale, focus at the more commercial aspect of it, for example, with the West Coast rock lobster. And still under the definition, the other part from the Marine Living Resources Act, the current one, is which has to be taken up with the department, the definition of a minister, and also the definition of the department. The Marine Living Resources Act defines the department as the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, and the minister being the minister responsible for the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. So I think this should be looked within the light that there was cabinet restructuring. So this may need to incorporate or to reflect that, more especially that since there were those proclamations in 2009, 2010, and the recent one now in May 2013. And the other part, when you look at the small-scale fisheries policy, the definition used in the slightly different to the definition used in the marine, in the proposed or in current bill. For example, if you look at the small-scale fishing community, what is apparent is that in the bill or in the small-scale fisheries policy, the department used a phrase which is socio-cultural group to refer to a community, which is somehow qualifying the people who are supposed to be benefiting from a small-scale fishery. But on the bill, it's just referred to as a group of persons. So maybe the committee may need to get some explanation as to why did the department remove the socio-cultural part, because it has some implications. And the other part which is slightly different is that there's an expansion on the definition of a South African being the ones qualifying for applying for fishing rights. What has been added are cooperatives. So now cooperatives can also apply for fishing rights in the fishing sector. And cooperatives have great potential to address some of the challenges that are faced by the country, for example, around food security and women empowerment, and also addressing issues of poverty. The Department of Trade and Industry looked at how cooperatives functioned in 2009. I'm not aware if they looked at this recently, but the report I had access to was the one published in 2012, which summed all the work which was done prior to that. And what they found that only 2,644 cooperatives of the registered 22,030 were operational, this translates to about 12% of cooperatives being active, but they use a weight survival rate, basically meaning that it's active or in the economy. It's somehow concerning that it's only 12% of this whole number of registered cooperatives across all sectors that are active. And they zoomed into each sector, and the one of relevance to us is the agriculture and food sector. According to that report, 89% of registered cooperatives in the food, in the agriculture and food sector, are not really successful, or they use failure. So, which means it's just under 10, it's just about 11% of agricultural cooperatives that are operational or active in the economy. According to their reasons that they found which affects the cooperatives, the untargeted and uncoordinated support which is given to these cooperatives. And this one, hence it manifests itself in the form of poor mentorship and lack of extension services. And from the side of investment, there is very minimal dedicated investment towards cooperatives or to assist cooperatives. And the other reason being that there is a sense of neglect among all spheres of government and their respective enterprise development agencies. So the issue of cooperatives even within fisheries may need to be approached cautiously, more especially given that most of the challenges faced by the cooperatives across all sectors still remain unaddressed by and large. So the department may need to look into this thing, how are they going to assist the cooperatives to ensure that they don't become part of the statistics, because cooperatives, for example, in our countries, be it India or most of the developing or a number of the developing countries, cooperatives are really doing well because there is a direct involvement and support from the state. So this may also need to be looked at closely. Then when we go to Section 2 of the bill, it's an amendment of the objectives and the principles, when they are going to add 3 into the current ones, so that they ultimately about 13 actually. Which is under Section 2, is Section 2 K, L and M. When looking at Section 2 J of the current MLRA and Section 2K, there's some form of an overlap in this one, because the ultimate goal there, if I may read them, Section 2J. Okay, it reads, the minister and any organ of state shall in exercising any power under this act have regard to the following objectives and principles. And J is the need to restructure the fishing industry to address historical imbalances and to achieve equity within all branches of the fishing industry. That is on the current act. And in the bill, A reads, the need to promote equitable access to and involvement in all aspects of the fishing industry, and in particular to rectify the past prejudice against women and other marginalized groups. When looking at they basically speaking to the same issue of transformation, with emphasizing equitable access to resources and redressing historical prejudices. So what could possibly be done is to combine these two, because they really mean the same thing, unless the department has a different understanding on between these two sections. And section 2L on the deal, there is it's incorrectly phrased, because they used a conjunction which is or. Like if you look at the last, almost the end of that part, they used a conjunction instead of a preposition of. It's supposed to read last part, alleviation of poverty, not alleviation of poverty. And then the next one, which is introduced, there deals with the possibility that the allocation of rights and as well as the total allowable catch for the exerted effort can be on more than one species. In line with this, the department did mention on some occasion that they are looking at having a basket of fish species that can be exploited by mostly the small-scale fisheries. However, there was no mention of this basket of fish species that they have identified. They generally said they are working on it. So the committee may need to inquire on whether has the department reached that point or where they can say, okay, we have identified this and this and that species to be exploited by the small-scale fisheries. Then when we move to section 14 and section 18, basically section 14 2 and section 18 1, what's happened there is the substitution of the word subsistence with small scale. Section 14 deals with the power of the minister to determine or to allocate set DACs or TAEs, while section 18 deals with or empowers the minister to grant fishing rights to the small-scale fisheries as well. So it's basically the extension of the power of the minister to cover the small-scale fisheries as well. And then the next one being section 19, where there is a bit more, it's more of a replacement, because section 19 was dealing specifically with subsistence fishing. So now section 19 will deal with small-scale fishing. So everything below that that was then will now be talking to small-scale fishing. And the department did expand a little bit on the provisions which were there under subsistence. The section basically empowers the minister to establish and manage small-scale fishing zones. So I believe these fishing zones will be also informed by the availability of the fisheries resources, and also to set up processes and procedures to regulate the whole small-scale fishing and to manage it. So I think when the department briefs the committee on the basket of species, they will have to go beyond just that and also talk to the zones that they have identified to be fished by the small-scale fishing sector. and then the next one being section 24, which has basically the same change, substituting subsistence with small scale. This section empowers the minister to consult with the forum of advisors as established in the section 5 of the Marine Living Resources Act. So this one deals with mostly the issues around or within fisheries, so that the minister can make an informed decision. That is basically it, but there are some other issues which are related to the small scale fishing, because the department on its strategic plan, they said they are going to implement the small scale fisheries policy during the 2013-14 financial year. So given that last month, I think it was sometime last month, the department mentioned that it has not finalized the implementation plan of the policy. So the committee may need to probe as to how far have they gone with the development of that small-scale fisheries policy implementation plan, given that they have already started the process of amending the Marine Living Resources Act to accommodate the implementation of the small-scale fisheries policy. And and given that the process of application has already been opened, so I think it will just be useful for the committee to be informed as to what does the plan say, given that they've already implementing something related to the policy without having finalized the implementation plan, which they said is going to, a copy will be made available to the committee. So as far as I'm aware, there's no implementation plan copy that was sent to the committee. And then the other part which may need to be explained is the 424 million rand that will be required to implement the small-scale fisheries policy over the next 5 years. Given that, okay, these two issues are tied together to the implementation plan, that as to how did they come to the 424 million rand if they had not finalized the implementation plan. Because when you look at this figure, it translates to roughly 85 million rand per annum when you exclude inflation. And based on the Treasury's projected medium expenditure estimate, this will translate to about 20% of the budget of the fisheries management branch, which is substantial. So the department will need to explain that. And given that funds are not always easily already available, it will be useful for the committee to be informed what is the alternative plan should they not get that amount of money that they require. Because in a way, it will also reflect against their targets. It will be somehow a reflection of their planning. According to the IGD team, the department states that there are about 30,000 subsistence fishers, but the figures vary from one report to the other. But for argument's sake, let's use that 30,000 figure, 30,000 subsistence fishers figure. And when look at that amount, they will now have to be closely regulated as well. On the other side, there is, according to the department's report, no, it was not actually in a report, it was during a briefing, it was said that the department has over 7,000 small-scale fishers, the figures which are generally used are just over 2,000, but that's what was said during that briefing. So when we combine the 30,000 and the 7,000, we have over 37,000 small-scale fishers, which can be trusts, can be communities, can be individuals, and can be cooperatives. Then this takes us to the next question of how realistic is this kind of management going to work? Because if we look at most of the high value species exploited, mostly in the small scale fisheries like West Coast rock lobster, the department did admit that they are struggling to enforce compliance within that. If we use the figure of 2,000 to manage that 2,000 and also to curb poaching, so now that the figures would be, if we use these figures of 37,000, now they will have to manage 37,000 people. But we should keep it in mind that it's not only the department that's going to manage them. It's going to be co-managed, which means there will be structures within the communities which will have to carry the responsibility of ensuring that there is compliance. But there is, I don't know whether I can call it a culture of non-compliance among some resource users, which is I don't know how much power will this community-based management structures, how much power will they have to ensure that there is minimal over-exploitation of resources. I think the committee can take that one up with the department. And there was also a comment made by the current acting deputy director general of the fisheries branch, who on in relation to the process of allocation of rights, what he did mention was that every applicant will start from, if I quote his words, from the clean sheet. So when you read the general policy on the allocation on the management of fishing rights, it is specific that there is an evaluation criteria which will be used, or which will be used to assess those ones who are currently in the fishing sector and those new entrants. And in line with this, the department conducts I don't know whether I can say it's a regular, but they should conduct a regular performance review to assess whether right holders are actually using the rights that they were afforded. And a report was published last year which details how each subsector performs or how each right holder performs. And those ones, those performance indicators, as well as compliance, like compliance is one of those measurables from those indicators that they use to, or they should use to assess according to the policy. They somehow set the guideline that if people violated some fisheries laws, they may be excluded. So which may mean that they were understanding. It does not mean that everybody will start afresh or start on a clean sheet. Some of the performance will have some form of a bearing on probably the scores that they might get. And also depending on the investigations, because there are some investigations that the department is conducting against some right holders. So if they are found some to have violated that, it might have a bearing on whether they qualify or not for this round. So I think that may need to be taken up with the department to get some clarity on that. And yeah. But the other thing is that the department did mention that some right holders may no longer be active in the fishing industry maybe on one or the other ground, maybe they had their rights revoked. So if I understand it well, I might be wrong. If they say you start on a fresh, or start afresh, I don't know whether it really means that whatever offences you may have done before no longer count. Okay. The other thing that the committee may need to look at is what the department in previous year, they will have this target of developing or constructing fish processing establishment to assist the small-scale fishes. This is important in the sense that not only the fish processing establishment, it's also the holding facilities. These are important in ensuring that the value for the resources is retained and there's some value addition instead of simply selling the unprocessed or just raw fish. Because what happens if you go to most of these fishing towns, you find that in the morning the value of fish X will be higher. So come the evening time, the price will drop to a point where it's relatively almost free. So the development of this, either the holding facilities or the fish processing establishment can help can go a long way in value addition. So the committee may need to look at that and check with the department on how far are they with that, because what they did this year on this year's strategic plan, they removed that target. So removing that target and implementing the small-scale fish, they said, means something completely different, because the small-scale fishers, they generally don't have the financial muscle to build all these things on their own. Yeah, as wrapping up, is that some of the fish species that are currently harvested by the people in small-scale fishing or interim relief program, their status is a little bit showing that they are either overexploited, depleted, and some, particularly in the lionfish, may have collapsed. But according to the report of the department, I don't know, status of the marine fisheries resources, I think, of 2012, that some of these resources are recovering, while others, there's clearly that indication that they are not recovering. For example, with the West Coast rock lobster currently sitting at about 3.5% of the pristine proportion, it is a little bit worrying that the ones that are currently exploited, or can even include abalone there, the status is not that, according to the department's report, that abundant to allow more pressure to be exerted on them. But given that now, with the implementation of the small-scale fisheries policy, it might mean that there will be some sharing, because on the bill they specifically mention the equitable sharing, whether they will focus on these ones or they will expand to other areas. And the other thing which ties close with this one, the department is expected to conduct searches into new or other fisheries resources, or develop new fisheries to ensure that they diversify the fishing industry, particularly the one which will benefit the small-scale fishers. And that target is not there on the strategic plan for this year. So the department may need to give some clarity as to how much progress have they made in developing new fisheries, and what is the possibility of the small-scale fishers being accommodated into those ones, given that the status of some of the high-value species are, it's not really sustainable at the moment to accommodate expansion. But you find conflicting information when you talk to the fishers, because some of them say that no, the resources are still there, and on the other side you have the department saying that no, the resources are depleted. So that, yeah, I think the committee may need to look at that. Maybe another thing is, given that the socio-economic challenges in most of the coastal communities is not so, cannot solely be addressed by the fishing or the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. They may need to bring on board other state departments to assist in addressing the challenges faced by those communities. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nhlanhla. Maybe I'll be guided, but what I think is that we need to seek clarities on this presentation that will be directed to the presenter. And because today the chairperson is not here, let's just be focused and concentrate on issues of the presentation. And then the department, when it comes, questions can be directed, those clarities that concern the department. So let's concentrate on what the presenters are saying to us today. I think that is my suggestion. Any issues of clarity?
Can we get another presentation? So we first finish all the presentations and then go forward.
I appreciate.
Oh. Thank you, Jefferson. Good morning, members. I'm in a position where I was asked to advise on or provide a legal opinion on the bill. And I informed the chairperson, and I said, well, that's usually the department and the state law advisor who does the presentation on the bill. And then after sort of asking him a few more questions on what he really wanted, it came out, he asked about the issue of the granting of rights where there's no legal provision for the granting of those rights. And I was still unclear, and then some searching, and I found that there was an Equality Court decision and there was a Supreme Court of Appeal decision as well. So I'm sort of going to give the committee a summary of what was said in the Supreme Court of Appeal and the Equality Court decision, and then how it is addressed in the amendment bill. And this is the presentation. It took me very long to actually get what specifically the chairperson wanted. So I do apologize for only giving this presentation now. I was literally trying to get everything together and having to analyze the case that I only got yesterday afternoon. So I do apologize for that. Okay. The presentation is this document over here. And basically there are three columns. First one is the issue, which is one of the concerns that was raised in the Supreme Court of Appeal decision. And then the second column is refers to the bill and how it is addressed or corrected or proposed to be corrected in the bill. And the legality is one of the concerns or the concern raised by the chairperson about that specific issue. So, firstly, members should bear in mind that there were three court cases. The first two were in the Equality Court, where members of a previously disadvantaged fishing community took the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism at the time to court with regard to the granting of rights in terms of the Marine Living Resources Act. The outcome there was that a specific dispensation would be created through the exclusion in Section 81 of the Marine Living Resources Act, and by excluding a specific category of people would then grant them rights. I know that sounds very weird, but it's excluding the previously disadvantaged fishing communities from the requirements of having to apply for a permit per se, and then in so doing they would be given rights. They would be given recreational fishing rights under the Act. Then the second Equality Court case was for the publishing of a draft policy on the granting of rights and inclusion of these additional fishing communities. The third case then is the big commercial fishers who then took that decision or appealed that decision to the Supreme Court in Court of Appeal, saying that the Minister had acted ultra-various and didn't have the power to do this or to grant these rights because it amounted to acting out of his, at the time it was his, a male minister, his rights. So those are the three court cases, and there will be subtle references to them all the time, and so the members should bear this in mind. The first issue was application of the classification of the fishing rights. In the application of the granting of the rights, the minister had excluded the coastal and subsistence fishers. Now, the definition in the bill now is being amended, but I will come to that later. The Principal Act says in Section 18 that the minister, that no person may undertake fishing unless the minister has granted him or her or the person or the juristic person like a business, a right in terms of Section 18. Section 14 also says that the minister then may determine the portions of the total allowable catch to be allocated to subsistence, recreational, and local fishing. Now, the total allowable catch, that term means how much in total may be caught of a particular species may be caught in a particular year. So it's not just one person, it's the entire, everybody together, how much they may catch, how much may be removed from the ocean. So that's just also one of the issues that members should bear in mind. How this is addressed in the amendment bill is in section 2, clause 2, amends the principle of the Principal Act. So it's the inclusion of equal access, access for marginalized groups, specifically for women, and also the recognition of socioeconomic development and poverty alleviation and how this can address the needs of subsistence and coastal communities who fish. Also, clause 3, which now includes a different an extended definition for small-scale fishers. It used to be subsistence, now it has been changed to small-scale fishers, and it extends that that definition. Because one of the concerns raised also in the Supreme Court of Appeal was the selling of excess catch and how this then excluded certain communities from the definition in the principle, from the old definition in the Principal Act. One of the concerns also raised in the Supreme Court of Appeal case was that the minister had then changed the categories and in terms of how these rights were then granted. And the court said in that Supreme Court of Appeal case was that the department had created its own problem. It had now created this category of limited commercial rights and in so doing had now ignored the needs of the subsistence and coastal communities. So by creating this new category, the department had excluded a considerable amount, thousands of coastal communities who traditionally would have access to the fishing rights. How this is addressed now in the Marine Living Resources Amendment Bill is Clause 1 includes now a new definition which extends an entire category, and also it includes this now definition in Section 14 and Section 18, as Nsanhla correctly pointed out. Page 2 of the document then refers to the Equality Court Agreement Number 1, which says that the agreement between these, it was an NGO who represented a few thousand subsistence and coastal community fishers. So it was an agreement between the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism then, and this NGO representing all these communities, was that interim measures to accommodate fishers along the western and southern Cape coast. Basically, it was because it was in the Cape High Court and it was around the issue of the rock lobster. So these were, and after speaking to the chairperson, it seemed as if this was one of the issues that he was concerned about, the granting of rights where there is no legal framework for the granting of those rights. I think that was what was his concern. Once this agreement then, these interim measures were not implemented, the persons would have to be identified, the coastal communities would have to be identified, and they would, as I pointed out earlier, would have to apply for recreational fishing license. So they were then excluded in terms of Section 81 and granted rights in terms of that exclusion. But this case was had in 2007, And the time frame for these coastal communities to apply for this exclusion and then get the rights in terms of recreational fishing was the 30th of September. And then there was another part of the agreement which said that sort of time period can be extended. It didn't say how long, it just said that it could be extended. Now the problem with that was that it was, the case was heard in the beginning, the first quarter of 2007, and the fishing communities had to be identified, A, and B, they also had to apply by the 30th of September, which was a very short period. So the court held the department had created its own emergency in that case. As is suggested in the Marine Living Resources Amendment Bill is Clause 5 of the Amendment Bill recognizes where it sort of regulates the small scale fishers, and it says where they may fish, it recognizes specific communities, and they also then prescribe different procedures and the recognition and granting of rights for those small scale, for the new definition of small scale fishers. Also, Clause 6 of the Amendment Bill says that the Minister may then reduce the amount of the total allowable catch for small scale fish as well. The chairperson was concerned around this. He said, I mean, how is this legal? Is this normal? And I looked at specifically what the Supreme Court of Appeal, in dismissing the appeal by the big fishing companies, the court said it is totally acceptable to grant these rights in terms of the Constitution, because it was to meet and address the needs of the Marine Living Resources Act. The court specifically looked at the preamble, which is the long-term sustainable utilization of marine resources in an equitable and fair manner. It also said that the court looked at Section 18.5. It said that of the principal act, which shall have particular regard to the needs permits of for new entrants, particularly those with historical background, historically disadvantaged backgrounds. Like I said, it was there's a case citation. The interim measures were then deemed acceptable in terms of the case, and the court also held that Equality Court decision was that the court held there correctly that the minister had acted irrationally by taking into account the transformative agenda of the marine living resources and the restructuring of the fishing industry in order to address historical imbalances. And then finally, the court also said, the Supreme Court of Appeal said that the minister had acted correctly or intervened in terms of Section 81, had acted correctly by giving these fishing communities an exclusion in terms of Section 81, and then also by in so doing has been granted them rights. The final page then, which I mentioned earlier also, is the Equality Court Agreement, which is the finalization of the policy, and the agreement there was that the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism at the time would then publish this policy for the draft policy for comment by 2009, and then that I'm not sure if the minister has, if that policy has been provided or has been submitted for public comment. If there are any other issues or questions, I'm going to ask you to ask.
Thank you. We had both presentations from the legal services and the research unit. So shall we ask questions of clarity?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. You know, the difference between subsistence and small scale is quite a big issue. I think if you look at the presentation that the department gave us, that there are in KwaZulu-Natal 19 communities and 1,359 fishers that are subsistence fishers, and in Eastern Cape there are 82 communities and 4,474 subsistence fishers that will now become small scale. Now, I think in the whole of the Western Cape and Northern Cape there are but 1,500 fishers that are at the moment subsistence fishers, according to the department's own. So it looked like the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, the eastern side of the coast and the west coast, is quite different. Is there a possibility of dealing with those two differently? Whereas on the one side you have people that fish because they're hungry, and they eat low, they catch low value, they catch I think brown mussels and the East Coast rock lobster, which doesn't even taste nice as the West Coast rock lobster. So they really catch it to feed themselves of it. They don't catch it to eat a nice half, like if I can put it out that way. Now these people are going to be quite disadvantaged because of this new act, I think, because previously they had these rights and they didn't actually have to apply for too much permits. There was not too much legal process put on them to actually catch the food for themselves. On the other side, you have the high value near shore stocks of the perlemoen and the West Coast rock lobster, where people actually catch it to sell it to get money to buy food, which is totally different to the way the East Coast works with it. So is there a different way of working with it too? Because I can see the people in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal becoming very upset about this amendment if we go through that as been proposed. And then, you know, I also want to put it on record that I would support any means to alleviate the current injustice which reigns at the coast, where people, where communities that relied on fishing for a living are now have now become poachers and criminals because they are excluded in the boat. So we would welcome any way to address that. I really want to put that on the record because on the statement the minister released, she seemed to think that we don't support it. And I want to put on record that we do. What we don't support is to have a blanket community approach where you have to have cooperatives. You know, we have seen cooperatives, they create animosity in communities, you have a lot of... If you have a cooperative where a lot of people work together and want to work together and choose to work together, it's fine. You have that. But we have seen lots of examples of where it didn't happen. You know, our people are also very funny. You know, if they have something and you take it away and you put it in a pot and they have to fight for what they had before, people don't like to do that, you know. So now you create a situation where people... have got certain rights, they do fish, they would have to pool all that in a cooperative and then in the end of the year wait for their part or wait for their bit of money to come out. And we believe that this is a system where you can only create, you know, fat cats and people at the top getting a lot of benefit from it and the poor people still stay poor because they... People don't want to fight too much for what they, for, you know, they don't want to be in arguments and then other people that are, they walk over them. A lot of these people are also, they don't have a very, they are not very educated as well. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. The people at the coastal areas which are fishing communities, they fish. That's what they know. Mm-hmm. They don't have degrees in, there might be some that do, but I mean they don't have degrees in fishing. So, they can be misused and people don't trust cooperatives. They have phoned me from all over. They don't want cooperatives. They want their individual rights. So we need to have a serious look at that argument and see how we're going to address that in this new bill as a committee. Then they also allude to the basket of species. Has this basket of species been ascertained? What will the basket look like? How much species would be included? What, you know, for cooperatives? And then the law enforcement that is lacking in the communities at the moment. There are no observers. You know, we have lost, or we are in the process of losing our status where lobster is a preferred product. Everybody wants it, and you can eat it freely. It's now downgraded to an orange, where you have to think twice before you buy or eat it. There's big shopping centers that have now decided not to to sell it anymore, which you know, we don't want to create other unintended consequences. And then there was also the cost of the bill, 480 million rand. I think that is quite a preposterous amount of money for a bill. And I would like to know why it is so much. Why it's like half a billion rand. what is that half a billion rand going to be used for? I think the committee must be informed on that before we actually look at that. Is it going to be to dish out, I don't know, hampers over election time? I would like to know that. And then this was addressed to the researcher that made the presentation. I need to know those things, and if we are going to include that in our in our deliberations we have in the committee. And then to the law, I didn't get your name, Mr.
Rotger.
Mr. Rotger, you know, the time frames, the committee also raised concerns, or we in the committee, to the chairperson about the time frames. We've got the amendment bill in front of Parliament. The people outside there already have put in or are already applying for the rights that will be granted to them by this amendment bill. How legal is that you can run a process ahead of time where you sit in Parliament to decide on a bill, and then those people are already applying, and they might be in process where they are being verified, and it's all dependent on if this bill is going through Parliament or not. I mean, has the department not created its own emergency by leaving it or late? I mean, for a year and a half already, we've been saying the Marine Living Resource Act should be coming to Parliament. There are actually major changes to the Marine Living Resource Act that needs to happen. But now, because it's now an emergency again, it's only limited to a certain part. Also, the other part, the public participation process, it didn't include or talk about what we are seeing in front of us now. It was a total different form that went out for public participation. So how legal is it to be in Parliament without that public participation process having been followed? And now you can say, well, we in Parliament can also follow a public participation process. And that brings me to another process where I think this bill, it was decided that this bill will not go to the traditional leaders, where speaking rights is traditional things, and the traditional leaders should have a say in it. On the bill, and the public participation should be going there. And if it's not going there, why not? I mean, I would want to know how legal will it be to push through these amendments through Parliament in this short a time. And then there was a last one. I did touch on it earlier, but it's the cooperatives that is worrying me at the moment, where we are saying that people should have cooperatives, and we know that it causes infighting in the community. We also have looked at cooperatives. Oh yeah, and then we, on the 16th of May last year, the Parliament accepted the report, and I will read one of the recommendations of this committee, and that was to avoid cooperative structures, especially since they have been proven to have failed. And they talk about the SACFC, Kelk Bay Harbour Lice, and Dorenbaai Pilot Cooperative Initiative that have failed. And then this committee and made a recommendation, and Parliament endorsed it. So how can the department go against these recommendations? The added issue is that, this recommendation was to ensure that fundamental fishing rights are economically viable and not allocated in a way that threatens compliance and sustainability. Now, if you have all of a sudden 30,000 people that need fishing rights, and the fish is already under pressure, or the stocks are under pressure, how reckless can it be for us to change the bill to give those 30,000 people their rights, but it threatens the sustainability of the fish stocks, and as you have heard already, at 3% some of them, 3.5%. I don't want to be called a liar for 5%, 4.5%. But how can we do that? Those are answers that I would need. Thank you.
Honourable Van Dalen, I left you to talk. Though now we've just clouded issues, the things that need the department should wait until such time when the department comes and takes us through this bill. For this session, all what we need to do is to concentrate on what the two presenters have just put in front of us and seek clarities on those. And then what needs the department to explain, like the rest, most of your input, we'll wait for that moment when the department comes to the committee. and then they'll have to explain these things.
Yes, Chairperson, I understand your ruling, but it goes to the legality part of how we can amend the bill when we know there are problems. And I think if Mr. Rogan will be here at that same time, then it would be fine. Then I don't have a problem there. But I'm afraid that we will only have the legal representation here now. And so I'm asking all these questions now to see if it's legal to do these things. I mean, I can't ask the department if it's legal. They all say yes, but they will lie to us.
No, I think Stewart is here all the time when we need him. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Your legal advisor is a fellow advisor, Mr. Smart, sitting right at the end of the table. As the member raised a range of valid issues, one of the most important outcomes of the Supreme Court of Appeal case was that the court said that the minister, in that by following a procedure that meets the aims of the Marine Living Resources Act, is rational. It's fine because it's aimed by doing what, in this case, so she is doing, is trying to achieve the aims and objectives of that act. Given the fact that there are these previously disadvantaged fishing communities. So it's rational, it's completely in the presentation that I actually brought, actually highlighted a complete course, was that the minister had acted rationally and taken into account the transformation agenda of the Marine Living Resources Act, and also that the minister had acted in spirit, or in other words, correctly, by granting these rights. This process, or the rights that have been afforded to these communities in the interim while this bill is in Parliament, is completely acceptable. So I hope that addresses your question. Not at all. Okay. I mean, we can engage further if you need more clarity on the issue. You also raised the public participation issue, and again, as you pointed out, Parliament has the constitutional power to facilitate public participation, and we can engage with these small-scale fishing communities, and just because the bill is in Parliament doesn't mean that it has to stay or it can go back to the department. I'm not saying that's what needs to be done, but I'm saying there are mechanisms available for us to change and address the issues through a consultation process. So, say for example, the committee does embark on some sort of consultation with these fishing communities, whether it be the big ones and the small ones or vice versa. The committee is empowered to take over the bill and make it a committee bill and say, look, we want to make changes outside what is necessary or what is existing in the bill at present. If the committee chooses to do that, there are processes in the rules that need to be followed, like it would need to get the approval of the House in that case. But that's a purely political decision. If the committee deems that necessary in terms of the time frames, given the fact that there is this, not emergency, but there is this requirement to have this bill passed as soon as possible. In terms of the National House of Judicial Leaders, there's a specific requirement for how that should occur and whether it should be referred, and if it deals with cultural matters or the law customs of traditional communities. That's a very limited category, and I can see how the needs or the rights of the traditional fishing communities can fit into that. But it's a very specific criteria which one needs to look at that's provided for in the legislative framework, in the governance framework of that. However, that still doesn't mean that the committee can then request a specific input from the National House of Traditional Leaders to provide provide comments on the specific bill. It happened when the IP Laws Amendment Bill came back from the President, and there was an opinion that said that the committee has, in a substantial measure, followed the process already by requesting an opinion or public input from the National House of Traditional Leaders. So that, I mean, the committee in its public participation process is more than empowered to do that and request specific input from that body. Another question was the co-ops, and that is a political decision, and that will need to be sought out between the department and the committee, and it might even come out in the public participation process. I'm not in a position to answer that question. Also, the sustainability of the stocks, and how can rights move? The department, that's also a policy decision that will need to be decided between the committee and the department when the department does. But in terms of clause 6 of the bill, which seeks to amend section 24, it says that the minister may reduce the total allowable catch. That's for everyone. So regardless of whether you're the big trawler that is taking out stuff or the small subsistence fisher or a local traditional community, it still means that the minister can say, no, you can't fish as much. She doesn't make this out of nowhere. This actual sort of, look, we only have so much left, or this is our stock, so we have to have regard for that. And that was also brought out in the Supreme Court of Appeal decision, where the sort of way in which the minister makes these calculations was brought out in that case. So in deciding on what the total allowable catch is, the minister does have sort of scientific methods that she uses to determine that amount.
Thank you, Jackson. I can only say hallelujah, because this act, we were long waiting to amend this act. Unfortunately, I was involved all these years and can say from experience, the legal fundis is to help us craft, give content and contextualize the details of what we are looking for to transform and to alleviate poverty along the coastal communities. Because this act as it stands, the history of it, it was influenced by the rich who benefit from the sector. So now, it's long we were crying for transformation. We were even involved in those policy formulation. We were screaming and talking, but nobody was taking notice of us. We knew when it was endorsed in Parliament that it was endorsed at that time without our comments, without even those participation that they made. I do have the books of this, of the history of this. So I'm talking from a historical point of view. Even as it stands this act, there's much, much more sections that need to be amended. But these ones, in terms of food security, are more relevant now. Because we were targeted as this community. We may also neglected the country and failed food security since 2010. Because 2009, after the proclamation, we were told, and I debated, that we must amend the MLRA. Now we are doing it. We can't complain now. We must look at what is the context. We must look to content and contextualize. The terms in the act that is still giving cognizance to Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism doesn't make sense, because we are under agriculture, forestry and fisheries. And to me, we have to seek that the legal fund is to help us to include sections that give the financial support system. Because in agriculture you have CASP. So we must see how to influence that these CASP grants fundings are also helping the small-scale fishers. What the researchers alluded to about the plan. The concern must also be the implementation plan of the small scale fisheries policy, because it's new. And it's in our hands, Chairperson, to my understanding. Are we going to give instruction, because we are the lawmakers, to the department to extend the time frame of the allocations, although they are already busy, because it has come to an end, and it comes to an end according to the previous allocations. So that right time is coming now to an end. So the calling for new applications and for application and for evaluation processes is now. But we must be the ones to give direction to that, because that is also my concern. And being my concern, to my mind and my view, I am going to raise it to the department and give a proposal to that, not now. I have made a note of that one. The one that is also, to me, in page 7 of the researcher's enrichment of the X document, is the socio-cultural part that I will also ask the department to give us clarity. Because really here, it's about socio-economic empowerment and it's about food security. And if we are not amending this act, there will be no food security along the coastline. That's the truth of the matter. And our people, although we are going to them for inputs in public hearings, they are not well educated. And the younger generation, the bond freeze, they don't understand point of departure of what we are talking about. To me, it's a question of that is why we are here, to help the process and to help remedy this and to redress this. About the resources of the declining, there are two scientifically information to our disposal. I will say that the privileged ones talk about they are closing the door. Those who want to transform, they are giving us the real information. So who is giving us what? It's for us to take these documents that we are enriched, analyze, look what is the reality on the ground, look at the level of poverty, abject poverty, along the coastline. Look at 2005 allocations that made our people poachers, that made our people looters, that made our people to be today in jail because of hunger. And we can't afford that in our own democratic times, even if it means we have to go to court. We will ask people to that court. We will. Because it's us who are the lawmakers. We must amend to the ability, to the information coming to our disposal and what we experience where we are living in those constituencies. Chairperson, it has nothing to do with the minister. The minister must execute the mandate given by us. And I don't think Parliament's legal unit will mislead us, nor will the researchers. I've got a very negative appetite for the scientists of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, because they were never pro-poor. They were never accommodative to the coastal community. They are not helpful even to us. I think I even have a small office in that department, just working and looking for information and for help. I always go there with people. Help the people understand, because our people are not educated. Because of the legacy that we come from, we mustn't forget where we come from. To me, this was just to enrich and give us homework to do our own research. So I, Member Palish, I have benefited from this presentation. The charities I will seek it from the Department of Implementation Plans, of the resources, although I have my own information about resources, I'm still saying we are talking of poaching. We will talk also. We must have a way and means about the seals, because the seals are also poaching. The traditional snook, they eat the snook. A lot of quotas of snook. Poachers are not just the people. Poachers are also the seals. So we will have to talk about it. Whether they write many, many, many environmental activists or Chris Scorpion's articles and vulgar language, giving threats, emails. It won't help. Reality is we have to talk them, because people are contradicting themselves. They are saying they are all resources, but this side, they are defending the seals. We must talk of every sector. We must talk of everything that leads to the depletion of the dog. It can't be just human beings, and we say we human beings must die. We can't give them quotas, but we don't want the seals, because the seals is also a kind of a job creation species of health in the health sector. It is also a job creation species. It's a species, and we must talk about the species. If we talk about the basket of the species, seals must be included. So, Chairperson, to me, this document has enriched me, and it's given me a lot of homework, and some of the clause I do understand now. I had many questions, but after I've got this information, it is giving me a clear mind, and the cooperatives I'm also going to defend, because we say in those communities, individuals who want individual rights is those with money. Cooperatives, people don't, even those who are now embarking on the allocation, on the application process, they don't have money. About an assembly, they are just doing those applications without having even bread today on the table. But the hope is, I'm applying, maybe. They don't have, that's why they are in groups. We are trying to organize people here. Let's get organized to benefit to the resources. And we can't just look fisheries as a poor type of an apert, that fisheries is fisheries. There are other departments that have to come to the party. We've got the CRTP in place. It must come to the party. Rural development do have the tool to help us, and DDI. There are tools. We passed the BEE Act here in Parliament before we rise to recess, 2013, 3 months ago. So there are tools in place. We must reach this Act with the Act of DTI. We must reach it with the Cooperatives Act of Rural Development. It's not things that we are going to do in isolation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, member. Mr. Ntlanhla, do you want to comment?
Thank you, Chair. As members have currently pointed it, but most of the questions are actually directed at the department. The department should be in a position of answering to most of those ones. One thing which the DTI has done in relation to the cooperatives, they set up some incentive programs to assist with the infrastructure and some development assistance to assist development among cooperatives. But as Honourable Member Palis has pointed out, it needs other departments as well. And then the other one of the issues that was raised by Honourable Van der Leyen was the time period remaining to pass the bill. I don't know whether the time is enough or not, but what the one constitutional court ruling has said as a precedent, it was this ruling, that Doctors for Life International versus the Speaker for the National Assembly and others. It was in 2006. What it basically said is that public consultation should be meaningful And although there is no prescription as to how long should it be and what form should it take, but that it should, public consultation should not be rushed through Parliament. So I think maybe this may need to be considered, because some of the information which is coming is that some of the communities during the time when the department was conducting its own hearings or consultations, they were only informed after the meetings that the department was in those areas. So that has an impact. And the other thing being that the bill or the draft that was consulted on at that time is not the same as this one. So I think that members have to keep in mind that the time factor, it might be an important issue, but there is also this constitutional requirement that the committee does not have to run away from, because it might have some, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Miranda. I think it is broken. Broken. You can have your last word.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have nothing substantial more to say other than I think it would be important if the department were here to answer any sort of content questions that the members may have. And there's only three members here at present. So, I mean, it would be better if the department were here to give a full briefing. There are concerns and the sort of secretariat, so they can then, you know, give another briefing if more members are here, if so needed. It definitely would be important for the department where you have to come and give a full briefing on the intentions of the bill, etc.
Thank you, Rosen. I think we've come to a point where we say, in one word, thank you. Thank you, Nsanta. Thank you, Mr. Rogan. Thank you, Mr. Nsanta. So we have opened our eyes. Now, when we approach the department, when the department comes to present to us, we'll be in a better position to tackle these things with the background that you have given to us. Thank you very much once more. We think that you will be available whenever we need you. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Dear, for that. You have said the department must come and answer, but will we make a record of the questions that was answered today and then give that to the department so it can address it when they come to the committee next time, so it makes it just easier, otherwise we have to repeat everything again. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.